We have a very special guest who will join us today. Of course, he is a Hockey Hall of Famer. He won four Stanley Cups in his career. He's won a Norris Trophy. He has the NHL record for most goals in a season by a defenseman with 48. And he played over 1,400 NHL games, had 1,531 points, and then added another 196 points in 194 playoff games. Paul Coffey joins us. Paul, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
Hey, guys. How are you? That kind of sounds like Don McLean in American Pie long, long time ago.
Anyway, well, you know what? Hey, I'm doing awesome. And, hey, speaking of even a longer time ago, we'd like to kind of go back even farther. A lot of people know about, you know, Paul Coffey, the NHLer, but how did Paul Coffey become the NHLer, Paul? So, obviously, you're born in Ontario. Did your parents, did you have an outdoor rink? Were you playing at the outdoor rink? Were you like a hockey rat right from a young age of five or six? How did you get involved in hockey right from the get-go?
Yeah, I don't think like any different from any most of the kids in Canada or the U.S. for that matter. I mean, I love the sport. It was something everybody, I lived just outside Toronto, something everybody did, and I enjoyed it. I really liked it. I loved the competition. I loved that guys on the team I played on were better than I was, so I knew I had to get better, and it pushed me. But, I mean, I was one of those guys, I'm sure all kids are the same way. You didn't have to ask them twice to get out of bed. School was another thing. You have to get asked a couple of times to get out of bed to go to school, but hockey, you're up and hitting the action, and just a lot of fun, just a fantastic sport.
Were you always a defenseman?
I was a centerman, being from Toronto, the Leafs were my team. David Keon was my idol growing up, the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and played center, I guess, till I was 9 years old, and went and tried out for the local A team, which would be the equivalent to AAA nowadays, and coach put me back on defense. I wasn't very happy about it, and I just remember kind of mumbling on the way home, and my dad kind of turned around in the back seat and he said, how many forwards are on the team? And I said, nine. He says, how many are defensemen? And I said, four. He says, you're going to get more ice time, just give it a chance. And you know, the rest is history. I loved it back there. I loved seeing the play in front of me. I loved leading the play and seeing everything in front of me. And you know, the coach put me back there, which was always my strength because at that point I was a pretty decent skater. So coach was Bob Williams. He's since passed away, but I owe a lot to him for seeing it and making me enjoy the game and see the game from another position.
Yeah, Paul, I got to play 1 year of defense, you know, when I was like 19 and junior, having never played, and I was scared spitless playing, you know, just trying to. But I realized after a few games, like, man, you got to see the ice so much better, and obviously, you know, none of us could skate like you, very few of us could. Did you find that once you got back to defense, like that, you know, it was a better match for your skill set, or did it take you a few years to figure that out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just always liked it. Just, you know, Jason, exactly what you just said. You got to see everything in front of you. I mean, the play was coming at you. The play was going ahead. And I always felt being back there that no matter who you had in front of you on your team, your responsibility was to get them the puck as quick as you could if they were moving. And that's what I tried to do. And, you know, I was a good junior. I wasn't a great junior. And then I came to Edmonton and, you know, playing with Wayne, it just forced you to get better, you know, and Mark and Yari and Andy, every single forward we had in that team. And we played a bit of a modified European style. We liked puck control, but we also liked moving those pucks up as quick as we could. And I think that when you play with better players and you play that way, it's going to make you a better player. I was the type of defenseman that never wanted to dump that puck off the glass or off the boards unless it was your, like a quarterback, you looked at every single receiver. He wasn't open, then you had to throw it out of bounds. I always liked to make a play. I felt that it was a pretty good way to get the forwards to like you, and that's what I tried to do.
Paul Coffey joins us. Paul, we've heard lots of you know, rumors, myths. I don't know how accurate or true they were about you know, like your skating stride was something very few had seen. It was like you rarely touched the ice. Did you always, like, is it true that you had super small skates? And when did you start kind of hammering your feet into super tight skates?
Well, in Edmonton, I mean, I don't have big feet by any stretch of imagination. Probably 10 or 11 on a shoe. Depends on today's shoes. They all fit different. But, you know, I came to the Oilers and I was wearing a size 8 skate. And I left the Oilers wearing a size 6 3/4, double A, so a really tight heel and wide in the front. But you got to remember, Jason, back in those days, the skates weren't worth a darn. I mean, they were broken down. I mean, you get them stitched 100 zillion times. It probably weighed 5 or 6 pounds a skate. And you know, we had a trainer on our team at the time, was still, you know, an Oilers alumni and still part of the group, Barry Stafford, that really was instrumental with me because I just wanted to be better and I wanted to be faster and I wanted to get a more glide. And I heard somebody mention the name hollow one day and I didn't know what a hollow was. So Barry went to the chalkboard and explained it to me. And I said, and he said, if you take a little bit out, you'll have a better glide. So I said, let's try it tomorrow. So we tried it and the rest is sort of history. It allowed me to get on top of the ice, be a better skater and seemed to glide out there. So, you know, I had natural ability. People always ask me, how did you become such a great skater? I mean, I didn't work any harder than anybody else. I worked as hard as anybody else, but not any harder. I was just lucky enough to have God-given talent and worked hard at it.
Paul Coffey joins us, and you know, I love that, Paul, because your glide, now that you think about it, like we'd see Paul Coffey, and you could get to your speed, and you could just glide around guys. It was crazy. So you got the hollow. Did you notice it instantly? Did you have to adjust anything in how you skated once you adjusted the hollow?
No, I loved it. I actually remember stepping on the ice at Northlands, and by the time I took the next stride, I was at the goal line. I mean, the glide was incredible. I was like, wow, man, this is unreal. It takes a little bit away from your game. If you don't have a strong boot, i.e. your skate, you can get knocked off the puck a little bit because you don't have a lot of strength in your blade. But that's why the skate boot was so important to me and keeping it stiff in the right areas. But, it was good, especially when the ice was bad. You know, I was very fortunate throughout my career to never have, a serious knee injury. I had a couple scoped a couple times, but I think a lot of that had to do with playing in the Madison Square Gardens, the Spectrum in Philadelphia, the rinks where the ice was terrible. And, you know, with my blade the way it was, for the most part, I never caught a rut. I just went right over top of them.
Paul Coffey joins us. And, you know, Paul, you mentioned that, you know, you were a good junior, not a great junior. You had, you had pretty good numbers in junior, but you know, I had 102 points your final year. Then you come to Edmonton in 80, 81. That was the second year of the Oilers. Obviously, Gretzky had been there before. You being from Ontario, like, had you seen Gretzky? Did you know him at all before you came to the Oilers in 80, 81?
Well, yeah, I met Gretz and Wayne, and we were 14 years old, and he was living in Brantford, and he came to Toronto to try out for the Bantam team, the Toronto Nats, the Bantam team I was playing on. We had a pretty strong team, and that's where he wanted to go if he was coming out of Brantford, and he didn't make our team. So he went and played Junior B instead. I love the story because that's what I mean. What? I mean, I still got a picture of him sitting in the front row with his eyes shut, squinting at the camera, but he came to try out for our team, would have made it hands down, but he couldn't get his legal guardianship, his proper release from Brantford, so he just went and played Junior B, and then our paths seemed to follow each other. I mean, we became friends. He played Junior B, I played Bantam, he played second year Junior B, I played minor midget, played some years in Junior B. He went to the Sioux. I played Tier 2 Junior A. The next year I went to the Sioux. He was already gone. He went to Indianapolis. And then we ended up, as destiny would have it, I guess, being teammates finally in Edmonton.
And, Paul, we talk a lot about Gretzky, and Curry was fantastic, but many people remember Gretzky would come, he would button hook at the blue line, and Coffey would just come flying through, and he'd float a pass, hit you right in stride, full flight, and you'd go in. And was that, obviously you guys had talked about that. Do you remember how that, who came up with that idea? Was that just the two of you talking shop one day?
No, it was just talent. I mean, I'm, nobody's going to accuse me of flying a space shuttle, but I'm not a stupid guy. When Wayne's on the ice and he's got that puck and he's going, I know he's going to draw everybody to him. Yari knew he's going to drop everybody to him. Kevin, Foggy, it didn't matter who. You know, I laugh all the time because some of the passes Wayne made were so good, and people used to say he's got eyes in the back of the head. Nobody's got eyes in the back of the head, but Wayne could count. If we were playing Calgary and he had four sets of legs, so four players in front of him, four red jerseys. That told you somebody's open on that ice over there. So Wayne would just throw that puck blindly, even a guy like me or whoever else on our team. We knew it was our job to get up there. And if we didn't get up there, we got told. That was the beauty of our team. You know, we weren't afraid to get in each other's faces. And, you know, Wayne was incredible at that, his vision. Mark was a different player, equally as important and equally as good, and just but a straight-ahead guy. And him and Glenn drove that second line as good as anybody that's ever played the game.
Paul Coffey joins us in Edmonton Sports Theater, TSN 1260. Paul, quickly go back to your draft year in 1980. What do you remember about being drafted? What do you remember about that, you know, leading up to it? Had you talked to anybody from the Oilers or any other teams leading up to the draft?
Well, Barry Fraser, who was, you know, pretty much the architect for all those really good players we got in Edmonton prior to, you know, Mark, who was there as a free agent, Wayne was there, but the Currys, the Me, the Lowe's, the Andersons, the Moogs, the Fears, all those guys. And Barry was located in Kitchener, which is, I played a year and a half in the Sioux, and then I played a few months in Kitchener. And I think he just liked the way I played. He thought I could fit the Oilers style immensely, but I didn't talk a whole lot to Edmonton prior to the draft. They picked sixth overall, and you know, I didn't care, but they... The rumor was I would be gone before that. I talked quite a bit to Washington. Jack Button was his name. His son is in Calgary now, and you know they said if you're there when Washington picks number five, you're going to go to Washington. And that year, Peterborough, Regina, and I don't know who from the Quebec League was in the Memorial Cup. At that point, there was only three teams. And anyway, Brian Murray was coaching Regina. Darren Veach was a defenseman on Regina. Doug Wickenheiser was a centerman on Regina. Anyway, they went all the way. I believe Peterborough beat the Memorial Cup. So a lot of scouts got to see those players for, you know, for 2 months longer than the rest of us, so to speak. And, you know, Dougie Wickenheiser went number one. Danny Savard, French-Canadian, went number three to the Blackhawks. Darren Veach went number five, and I went number six, which it couldn't have been a better fit for me. And getting a chance to get to Edmonton, and, you know, if I go to Washington in a different system, who knows? Oh. We might not be able, probably not having this conversation for sure, because but it was just a perfect fit for me. I thought from day one that there's no way I'm good enough to play in this league. Intimidated just by everything around you because the NHL, it's where you always wanted to be as a player. And I still remember the turning point, which at that point you had to play 11 games to be committed to stay up with the team. And I played 10 games. We were in a hotel lobby in Colorado. And Barry Fraser comes up to me, and he's just matter-of-fact. He says, "What are you doing? What are you doing on the ice?" And I said, "Not much. I'm not playing my game. I've just got no confidence. I'm doing nothing." He says, "Well, you're staying. Get your game together," and walks away. And I just went, whew. But the weight of the world was lifted off my shoulders. I knew I was going to be up with the big team. I remember phoning home, being so excited. And my dad saying to me, "Well, son, you're not playing worth a shit right now. You don't have your confidence, and you're not going to get it in the game. So don't try stuff in the game, but get it in practice. Get your game going. Start lugging the puck. Start heading in the puck. Do the things you're good at." And had a real good first year. Tough up till Christmas, but after that it was good.
Did your dad ever coach you, Paul?
No. My dad never played hockey.
It sounds like he had some really good advice, though.
No, because my dad was a brilliant guy, as in he knew how to parent. He knew how to stay out of the way. He didn't ask you to do anything but work hard. And, you know, my dad since passed away, but he picked his brain quite a bit later on in life because I was coaching my kid. You know, I was hard on my one boy the one day, and my dad says, "Hey, what are you doing?" I said, what am I doing? What's he doing? He says, "Don't you worry about him. He's always sticking up for his grandkids, right?" And he says to me, and it always stuck with me, he says, "Son, I'm going to tell you one thing right now. Kids play sports to get better. Some become good. Few become great. Just sit back and enjoy the ride." I just went, as a parent, I'm like, hey, that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
And that's the way my dad was with me. I mean, you're at the rink on time, you had a new stick in your hand, your skates were sharp. After that, it was up to the coach and it was up to you.
Paul Coffey, talking about, of course, his unreal career, getting drafted sixth overall in 1980. And Oilers fans maybe should send a gift card to Washington when they elected to select Darren Veach instead of Paul Coffey. And, Paul, you mentioned you came to Edmonton. You're a little intimidated. You knew Gretzky, of course. Messier was there. But there was also a guy drafted in 1980 with yourself who went on to be a Hall of Famer. Do you remember your first impressions of Jari Kurri? Because I'm guessing, unlike Wayne, you probably didn't know much about Jari before your first camp.
I didn't know anything about Jari, but he was just a incredible athlete, incredible person. I remember early on, I think my first year I sat out six games, healthy scratch, I might add, but anyway, Jari got three goals on the island, and from that point on, I said, just what a special player. Quiet, confident, the perfect Paul McCartney, John Lennon with him and Wayne, and the perfect guy to be with Wayne. Saw the ice incredibly well, was good at both ends of the rink, and was a winner. I mean, at that time, not them all, but a lot of times the Europeans, unfortunately, had the stigma that they couldn't wait to go home. You know, April 10th rolled around, or April 7th, whenever the season was over, they couldn't wait to go home. And, you know, Jari wasn't that guy. He was a champion, won to win a Stanley Cup, and he was just a perfect fit for our hockey club.
Well, you guys,
third round to boot.
I know. Yeah, well, it's funny. From the 1980 draft, first and second in points, Coffey and Kurri. So pretty good scouting back then by the Edmonton Oilers, no question. You know, you mentioned you had Matty Hagman, Risto Siltanen, and then, of course, Esa Tiikkanen came. And, you know, the Europeans that you guys brought in, Jaroslav Pozar, definitely went against that grain of guys who necessarily didn't want to be here right for the long haul because they were all excellent professionals.
Well, the Finns are special guys. They just are. They're tough as nails. They like to have fun. They play hard. And they communicate, sometimes not verbally, in the sport, and they're ready to play. And I think the culture that our team had created didn't allow guys to come in and not be part of it. They got weeded out real fast, and it took a special guy to come into that strong group. And, it's funny you mentioned Jaroslav Pozar. And, with Wayne and Jari, just trying to think, Semenk, God bless him, he was great when he was on the left side with Wayne and Jari, but those guys aren't the two easiest guys to play with. I mean, just because they're so good, and you just have to fit in as that left winger, and Jaroslav Pozar did it immensely, and probably the strongest guy, him or, Mike Krzyzewski is another guy that fit in well with Wayne, but as pure strength on the ice, Poz was incredible. Didn't say a lot, didn't need to say a lot. Knew his job, got along great with Wayne and Jari, and it was fun to watch those guys play.
Well, I didn't know a ton about Jaroslav Pozar, but I remember when you guys celebrated that 84-85 team and he came back, and just the reverence that the young guys talked, because, at the time, he was an older guy in his 30s, right, on that team, which was a bunch of young bucks. But he really seemed to have earned the respect from your group. And was there not, like, one speech or something? Like, he never spoke, but he spoke up one time, and it really resonated with you guys?
Like Jason, you hit it bang on. Okay, so we come back for the, the ceremony, and you're excited about seeing everybody. I mean, for most of us, we've seen each other quite a bit, but some guys you haven't seen in a long time. And I remember standing there, and somebody said, "Pooz is here." I'm like, "Where is he? I got to go see him." Like, everybody wanted to go see Jaroslav. He was just he didn't speak the best of English. But I do remember him standing up once and just in no certain terms, just telling us, this isn't good enough. We need to be better. And I think we were playing in Chicago one game, and Al Secord was running around. Pretty tough guy, left winger, played with Denny Savard and Steve Larmer. And Pose just grabbed him, Tim Horton style. Didn't have to throw a punch, just grabbed him, put him on the ice and said, "Don't move." And that was that was pretty cool. But no, just a great individual, a big part of that team, as everybody was. I mean, you go up and down that lineup every single year, whether it be our years, the years after, Smitty and Jason Smith and Horkoff and Dougie Waite and all those guys, just incredible human beings. And, playing in a city like Edmonton, brings that out in you, because you're front and center. You're respected, or you're not. So you either better get in line, because the fans are tough, the fans are knowledgeable, the fans expect a good, hard-earned stay pay, and you end up being that kind of player, or you're not.
Paul Coffey joins us. And, Paul, you had tons of success in Edmonton. I know you've spoken many times how at the time you guys didn't sincerely love Glenn Sather. He was hard on you, but you look back and say, yeah, it was the best thing for us. You look back, though, at when you got traded, in 87, 88. Obviously your career worked out really well. You won more cups in other places. You look at that, is there any regret, or were you proud of, said, hey, you know what, I put my line in the sand and I was going to stand up for myself?
Well, you're never. I mean, I was only 25 years old at the time. I look back now and I go, how did I know what was going to happen? There just was some things that had happened that, whether it was my my position or my job to be unhappy, it didn't matter. But Lee Foglin was our guy, was everybody in that dressing room's mentor, was our leader, was our elder statesman, was everything to me personally. And he, Foggy wanted to retire an Edmonton Oiler. That's all he wanted to do. He didn't care about anything else in his life other than Carol and his two boys, and that's all he wanted to do. And when they traded him, I just said, man, we're all going to get it. We're all going to get it. And we either got to get them or they're going to get us. So I chose to get them, and I don't regret my move. And you look what happened the year after that. Wayne ended up getting sold, so that dominoes was going to start the fall. It would have been nice if we had a guy like the current owner, with Darryl being the owner. Like, that team would have stayed together a long, long time. But, I held my head high. I was okay with it. I did know I was giving up a lot, i.e. championships and stuff like that. But to me, it was time to forge somewhere else. And luckily for me, and I think Glenn, I know that he didn't want any success for me, just because he's a winner and he doesn't want to, when he trades a guy, he doesn't want him to do well. And that's just the way it is. But I think he discounted a little bit number 66 in Pennsylvania, and it was a great run there. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. You have yourself and Lemieux, and then you guys added Jaromír Jágr as a youngster, and then, Ron Francis came in, and, man, there was some pretty loaded teams in Pittsburgh. And, of course, you won a Stanley Cup, I think, in your third or fourth season with the Penguins.
Yeah.
And then you got traded, though, to L.A. The first trade you kind of asked for, was the trade from Pittsburgh to L.A. a surprise to you at all when it came down, or what happened there?
No, that's probably one of the only regrets of my whole career. I got into a little tiff with the coach at the time, and I had Wayne, who I was talking to quite a bit, and he was in LA, and I don't know. And I remember going into Craig Patrick, and Craig was a great guy, still is, and he's laughing at me. He says, you don't have to do this. He says, you can stay here. And I said, no, Craig, I think it's time to get on. And there's a bunch of teams interested, Western Canada, Detroit, Vancouver, teams like that, who had offered more than the deal to L.A. But Craig was such a great guy. And he says, I know that's where you want to go. So if you want to do it, I can do it. And I said, okay, do it. Probably shouldn't have. Everybody's got a different side to that story, but that's exactly what happened. Craig would tell you that too.
Well, that's totally fair, Paul. And then, you went to L.A. for a bit. And then, in Detroit, you guys had some really good years. Of course, you won another Norris Trophy there. And then later in your career, Paul, you were in Hartford and Philly and Chicago and Carolina, and then you finish up in Boston. Was it tough at all, or do you look back and it was unique to play for so many different organizations late in your career?
Well, listen, it certainly wasn't as planned, but I just wanted to be the best professional I could be. And, we chatted earlier about my father and getting advice. And, You know, my dad said to me when I was like 35 years old, he said, son, there's a pretty good chance going forward you're going to be hired.
Paul Coffey talking about, of course, his unreal career, getting drafted sixth overall in 1980. And Oilers fans maybe should send a gift card to Washington when they elected to select Darren Veach instead of Paul Coffey. And, Paul, you mentioned you came to Edmonton. You're a little intimidated. You knew Gretzky, of course. Messier was there. But there was also a guy drafted in 1980 with yourself who went on to be a Hall of Famer. You remember your first impressions of Yari Curry? Because I'm guessing, unlike Wayne, you probably didn't know much about Yari before your first camp.
I didn't know anything about Yari, but he was just a incredible athlete, incredible person. I remember early on, I think my first year I sat out six games, healthy scratch, I might add, but probably. Anyway, Yari got three goals on the island. And I, from that point on, I said, just what a special player. Quiet, confident, the perfect Paul McCartney, John Lennon with him and Wayne, and the perfect guy to be with Wayne. Saw the ice incredibly well, was good at both ends of the rink, and was a winner. I mean, at that time, not them all, but a lot of times the Europeans unfortunately had the stigma that they couldn't wait to go home. You know, April 10th rolled around, or April 7th, whenever the season was over, they couldn't wait to go home. And you know, Yari wasn't that guy. He was a champion, won to win a Stanley Cup, and he was just a perfect fit for our hockey club.
Well, you guys,
third round,
I know. Yeah, well, it's funny. From the 1980 draft, first and second in points, Coffey and Curry. So pretty good scouting back then by the Edmonton Oilers, no question. You know, you mentioned you had Matty Hagman, Risto Siltanen, and then, of course, Esa Tiikkanen came. And, you know, the Europeans that you guys brought in, Yaroslav Pozar, definitely went against that that grain of guys who necessarily didn't want to be here right for the long haul, because they were all excellent professionals.
Well, the Finns are special guys. They just are. They're tough as nails. They like to have fun. They play hard. And they communicate, sometimes not verbally, in the sport, and they're ready to play. And I think the culture that our team had created didn't allow guys to come in and not be part of it. They got weeded out real fast, and it took a special guy to come into that strong group. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned Yaroslav Pozar. And, you know, when Wayne and Yari, just trying to think, Sinek, God bless him, he was great when he was on the left side with Wayne and Yari, but you know, those guys aren't the two easiest guys to play with. I mean, just because they're so good, and you just have to fit in as that left winger, and Yaroslav Pozar did it immensely, and probably the strongest guy, him or, you know, Mike Krzyzewski is another guy that fit in well with Wayne, but as pure strength on the ice, Poz was incredible. Didn't say a lot, didn't need to say a lot. Knew his job, got along great with Wayne and Yari, and, you know, it was fun to watch those guys play.
Well, I didn't know a ton about Yaroslav Pozar, but I remember when you guys celebrated that 84-85 team and he came back, and just the reverence that the young guys talked, because, you know, at the time, he was an older guy in his 30s, right, on that team, which was a bunch of young bucks. But he really seemed to have earned the respect from your group. And was there not, like, one speech or something? Like, he never spoke, but he spoke up one time, and it really resonated with you guys?
Like Jason, you hit it bang on. Okay, so we come back for the ceremony, and you're excited about seeing everybody. I mean, for most of us, we've seen each other quite a bit, but some guys you haven't seen in a long time. And I remember standing there, and somebody said, "Pooz is here." I'm like, "Where is he? I got to go see him." Like, everybody wanted to go see Yaroslav. He was just he didn't speak the best of English. But I do remember him standing up once and just in no certain terms, just telling us, this isn't good enough. We need to be better. And I think we were playing in Chicago one game, and Al Secord was running around. Pretty tough guy, left winger, played with Denny Savard and Steve Larmer. And Poz just grabbed him, you know, Tim Horton style. Didn't have to throw a punch, just grabbed him and put him on the ice and said, "Don't move." And that was that was pretty cool. But no, just a great individual, a big part of that team, as everybody was. I mean, you go up and down that lineup every single year, whether it be our years, the years after, you know, Smitty and Jason Smith and Horkoff and Dougie Waite and all those guys, just incredible, incredible human beings. And, you know, playing in a city like Edmonton brings that out in you because you're front and center. You're respected or you're not. So you either better get in line because the fans are tough, the fans are knowledgeable, the fans expect a good, hard-earned stay pay, and you end up being that kind of player, or you're not.
Paul Coffey joins us. And, Paul, you had tons of success in Edmonton. I know you've spoken many times how at the time you guys didn't sincerely love Glenn Sather. He was hard on you, but you look back and say, yeah, it was the best thing for us. You look back, though, at when you got traded, in 87, 88. Obviously, your career worked out really well. You won more cups in other places. You look at that. Is there any regret, or were you proud of, said, hey, you know what, I put my line in the sand, and I was going to stand up for myself?
Well, you're never. I mean, I was only 25 years old at the time. I look back now and I go, how did I know what was going to happen? There just was some things that had happened that, you know, whether it was my my position or my job to be unhappy, it didn't matter. But you know, Lee Fulman was our guy, was everybody in that dressing room's mentor, was our leader, was our elder statesman, was everything to me personally. And he, Foggy wanted to retire an Edmonton Oiler. That's all he wanted to do. He didn't care about anything else in his life other than Carol and his two boys, and that's all he wanted to do. And when they traded him, I just said, man, we're all going to get it. We're all going to get it. And we either got to get them or they're going to get us. So I chose to get them, and I don't regret my move. And you look what happened the year after that. Wayne ended up getting sold, so that dominoes was going to start to fall. It would have been nice if we had a guy like the current owner, with Darryl being the owner. Like, that team would have stayed together a long, long time. But, hey, I held my head high. I was okay with it. I did know I was giving up a lot. I.e. championships and stuff like that, but to me it was time to forge somewhere else. And luckily for me, and I think Glenn, I know that he didn't want any success for me just because he's a winner and he doesn't want to, when he trades a guy, he doesn't want him to do well. And that's just the way it is. But I think he discounted a little bit number 66 in Pennsylvania, and it was a great run there. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. You have yourself and Lemieux, and then you guys added Jaromír Jágr as a youngster, and then, Ron Francis came in, and, man, there was some pretty loaded teams in Pittsburgh, and, of course, you won a Stanley Cup, I think, in your third or fourth season with the Penguins.
Yeah.
And then you got traded, though, to L.A. The first trade you kind of asked for, was the trade from Pittsburgh to L.A. a surprise to you at all when it came down? What happened there?
No, that's probably one of the only regrets of my whole career. I got into a little tiff with the coach at the time, and I had Wayne, who I was talking to quite a bit, and he was in LA, and and I remember going into Craig Patrick, and Craig was a great guy, still is, and he's laughing at me. He says, you don't have to do this. He says, you can stay here. And I said, no, Craig, I think it's time to get on. And there was a bunch of teams interested, Western Canada, Detroit, Vancouver, teams like that, who had offered more than the deal to L.A. But Craig was such a great guy, and he says, I know that's where you want to go, so if you want to do it, I can do it. And I said, okay, do it. Probably shouldn't have. Everybody's got a different side to that story, but that's exactly what happened. Craig would tell you that, too.
Well, that's totally fair, Paul. And then, you went to L.A. for a bit. And then, in Detroit, you guys had some really good years. Of course, you won another Norris Trophy there. And then later in your career, Paul, you were in Hartford and Philly and Chicago and Carolina. And then you finish up in Boston. Was it tough at all? Or do you look back and it was unique to play for so many different organizations late in your career?
Well, listen, it wasn't. It certainly wasn't as planned. But I just wanted to be the best professional I could be. And, we chatted earlier about my father and getting advice. And, my dad said to me when I was like 35 years old, he said, son, there's a pretty good chance going forward you're going to be a hired great Oilers. And Smink was that guy. And he, you look even now. I remember, maybe 5 years from now, 5 years ago. I'm walking around the new rink, and I can't get anywhere because you need a pass or you need a code to get everywhere. He says, follow me. So I follow him, and just the doors are kind of open. Everybody's getting out of the way. I'm following Snake around. I said, what's your job here? He goes, I'm the ambassador. I said, of course you are. He goes, who else? I said, nobody. Nobody but you.
It is just true.
Yeah, he was just perfect for it, right? He's Snake, and what he's done now with his drive and his legacy is lived on. I mean, it's just incredible. Dave's Drive, which I guess started last Friday, I'm hearing,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
I mean, hey.
And you're the honorary chair of the Champions Club, which is for Sports Central Transhumans Club, and they're looking for people who want to. It's a $500 a year membership that goes to support youth and run their programs at Sports Central. And it could be per month, which is about $42 a month. And with that comes where they have yourself and Gene Principe and a few others, where you know have Zoom calls with guys. So anybody who wants to be a member gets lucky enough to have a Zoom call with Paul Coffey, and I'm guessing just hear stories of Paul Coffey and his career and different guys you played with. Maybe I'm assuming a few stories about Semenko when he played as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not so sure that's such a big deal talking to me, but I'll tell you what the big deal is, giving back to the kids. I mean, it's a tough world out there right now. People's dollars are tight, the pandemic, the whole bit, but our future is the kids, you know, the young girls, the young boys, and getting them involved and in sports. And, you know, and I pledged some money up. I told Gene, I'll put my money where my mouth is. I want to be involved in this, because if we can get kids going in the right direction, I mean, there's no guarantees they're going to become a professional athlete, but it's just going to teach them how to be on time, how to get along, how to compete, yes, how to win, how to lose, which is the most important thing, how to lose and how to get back up. And those are just life skills that sports teaches you. And if we can get these kids and just buy some equipment, I mean, the whole city has done an incredible job, as only the Oilers, not the Oilers, but the city of Edmonton can do. And, you know, I'm real proud to be a part of it.
Well, I love that you're involved. And trust me, you're right. The most important thing is getting kids play. But an added bonus is to get to talk to a Hall of Famer for any of the members on an event that's going to be happening in February of 2021. And so just listen to some of the stories here today. I'm sure they'd be thrilled to do it, Paul. So as always, it's great to talk to you. Quickly, give me your thoughts on the retro jerseys that the Oilers unveiled. I don't know if you saw it today, but kind of going back to the WHA days with the orange on the shoulders and the white. What'd you think?
I think it's great. I think any time you can educate people of what your franchise, your orders is all about, and the colors, it's incredible. And you know, it's special. And I'm not saying it because I was an Oiler, but it's a special franchise. It just is, because you can't honor the greatest team of all time and the whole city get involved, or you can't have all these functions and just get the whole city involved. It's pretty incredible. The other team that's probably equally as good as that is the Montreal Canadiens, but other than that, I mean, the Oilers are right there, and I think it's great. They put a lot of thought into it, and I think they look unbelievable.
Paul, always great to catch up with you. Thanks for sharing your wisdom. As always, continued success. I hope you and your family are safe, and thanks again for supporting Sports Central.
Guys, anytime.